Light the lantern, boy.
I'm trying.
The sparks continued, but with no effect. In those brief flashes, Jig thought he saw movement at the far side of the pit, but he couldn't be sure. He moved toward the others. The creatures were closing in from both sides.
What's taking so long? Lighting fires is a child's duty, so why can't a full-grown human manage it?
Panic ripped away common sense, and Jig lunged at the prince.
Give me that!
One of the shutters was open, and the glass plane was slid to one side. Jig squeezed his fingers through the opening and felt the wick. It had slipped down through the crack into the oil supply, and only one corner still protruded. No wonder Barius hadn't been able to light the thing. He could shoot sparks all day without hitting that slim corner of wick, and Jig's fingers weren't small enough to pull the wick back out. Something touched his leg. Jig barely stopped himself from squashing Smudge. He stroked the fire spider's head. The oil on his fingers ignited. He jammed his fingers into his mouth. The fire died, though Jig would have a blister on his tongue, not to mention the awful taste of lantern oil.
What if I just set my fingers on fire and use them to light the lantern?
Having had more than his share of pain lately, Jig doubted he could do it. But his smarting fingers had given him another idea.
Sorry about this.
He scooped Smudge up in his uninjured hand. He stuffed the fire spider into the lantern and snapped the glass pane back into place. The wick blazed to life, and Jig got one glimpse of Smudge tapping indignantly at the glass before he was forced to look away. The afterimage of the lantern obscured the center of his vision. They had light, and he still couldn't see.
What are they?
By Earthmaker's Black Anvil!
Jig set the lantern on the ground and rubbed his eyes. When he looked again, he saw what had frightened the others.
I didn't know they grew that big!
Two carrion worms circled the party. They could be nothing else, but Jig had never seen worms of such length. Their bodies were at least 20 feet long, and each segment was the size of a goblin's head. The mouths were big enough to take a chunk of flesh large as Jig's two fists together, and black curved teeth surrounded each mouth. If these were normal worms, they would have a second, sharper row tucked inside and out of sight.
They're only carrion worms. They don't attack living things.
One of the worms lunged toward Darnak. He scrambled backward.
I'm mighty glad I am to be knowing that.
He backed himself against a wall and stood with his war club ready. Barius joined him there, guarding his left side. The worm that had attacked began to circle, long antennae flicking at the dwarf. The other hesitated, then turned toward Rihanna. She backed away as quickly as she could. The second worm reared, displaying six mouths in its bellies. The undulating teeth pointed outward, ready to rip the elf apart. As Jig watched, the teeth around one mouth folded inward.
Look out!
Jig lunged across the floor and knocked Rihanna down. A thin black tongue shot over their heads. It returned to the worm's mouth. Rieslin must have cast a spell. Glowing yellow fire floated from the tips of his fingers to the first segment of the worm menacing Jig and Rihanna. Clung to the worm's pale flesh, and it reared up again, waving back and forth in pain. Slowly, the fire spread to the second segment. The worm lashed more frantically, smashing into the walls of the pit and bloodying the burning segments.
Get off me!
Jig rolled off the elf and stood slowly. Rieslin had already turned his attention to the other worm. Darnak and Barius had managed to keep it at bay with their weapons, but neither had done any real damage. The wizard raised his hands again and began another spell. He didn't finish. The second worm convulsed with such force that it left the ground. The burned dead half of its body flopped back to the earth. The less damaged part crashed against Rieslin's back and knocked him into the wall. The wizard fell like a stone.
Rieslin!
Darnak knocked his worm aside with a powerful two-handed blow, then rushed to the fallen human's side. Darius raised his sword and sliced down, cutting the worm in two. Both ends fell still. Barius wiped the gore from his sword.
No? You'll forgive me, I hope, if I fail to heed the advice of a goblin on matters of battle.
Jig didn't bother to answer. Already, the split worm was beginning to heal. Each piece ended in an oozing half-segment where Barius' sword had struck. As Jig watched, those damaged segments dropped off, leaving two healthy, hungry carrion worms. Jig snatched up the broken sword he had used to cut his ropes and tried to think.
To me!
Rihanna and Barius raced toward the dwarf. Jig started to follow, but halfway there, he stopped. Carrion worms preferred dead flesh. At least, normal ones did. He stared at the dying worm, now almost completely charred. That definitely qualified as dead, and the worms had no qualms about cannibalism. He used his rusty blade to hack and tear a chunk of the worm free. He flung the meat at the nearest of the two living worms, which reared to catch it in midair. Meat clutched in its teeth, the worm dropped to the ground to feed.
This is the most disgusting thing I've ever done! Even worse than Privy Duty after one of Porak's drink adventures!
A second chunk of flesh distracted the other worm. As it turned out, the giant carrion worms were not only large and deadly, they were also stupid. Fatally so. As long as Jig kept them fed, they were perfectly content to sit and eat. Even as Darnak ran around smashing one worm segment after another with his war club, the worms continued to feed on bits of their fellow.
Okay, you can stop. The beasts are dead.
The blood-slick blade fell from Jig's numb fingers.
This is not the kind of battle I recite poems about.
I don't know. I could imagine a nice little ditty about it. First verse should explain how we got stuck down here. Help me out, Your Highness. What rhymes with mule-headed stubbornness?
The goblin did this deliberately, hoping the worms would finish us off.
Right, except that the worms would have eaten him as fast as the rest of us.
Silence! He hasn't the foresight to consider such an end. And I warn you to keep that tone from your voice when addressing your betters.
So how are we going to be getting out of this little hole?
Darnak took the lantern and unshuttered all four sides. He couldn't aim the light upward without spilling the oil, but this was enough for them to see the dark shadow of the ceiling.
Looks a good 15 feet to me. Lucky the ground is softer here.
Brother, can your arts release us from this prison?
Give me a moment. Magic requires a clear head, and mine still spins.
While they waited, Rihanna walked over to Jig.
Thanks.
Eh?
For knocking me out of the way back there.
Oh, I saw a carrion worm catch a rat like that once. Oh no, Smudge!
Jig ran at Darnak and tried to pull the lantern away. The dwarf swatted him with his free hand.
Here now, what's this?
My fire spider's in there.
What?
Darnak held the lantern higher and peered inside.
Oh, so he is. That's how you were lighting this thing.
Very gently, he set the lantern on the ground and slid the glass back. Smudge scurried out, apparently unharmed. He raced away from the lantern. Halfway to the far wall, he stopped and rubbed his legs together, one pair at a time.
Probably trying to clean off the lantern oil.
Jig knelt and held out one hand for the spider. Smudge glanced at him. Then very deliberately, he turned away and continued to groom himself.
I am ready.
Ryslind had taken another coil of rope from Darnak's pack. As the others watched, he sprinkled a bit of blue powder on the rope. One end of the rope rose, reminding Jig of the way the carrion worms had reared up to attack. The rope climbed steadily higher until it reached the ceiling.
I don't suppose that magic rope of yours can punch through the trapdoor.
Do not disturb my focus. I need to channel more power.
Ryslin's brow wrinkled, and the end of the rope curled into a tight ball. Ryslin's eyes flashed red, and the rope slammed against the trapdoor. A large square of rock swung down. Jig leaped back, afraid the stone would crash onto their heads. But it scraped to a halt, spraying them all with a layer of dirt and grit.
Quickly! The longer I hold it open, the more it drains me.
Barius was already climbing. Darnak sent Rihanna up next, then looked back at Jig.
Your turn, goblin.
My name is Jig.
Climbing out of the pit was difficult. Jig had never been strong, and his hands and arms weren't used to this sort of work. But he eventually reached the top.
Yeah. Marius, who had reached down to help Rihanna out of the pit, didn't even look at Jig as he struggled to hook his ankle over the edge. Darnak followed a minute later. Then Risland appeared, pulling the rope up behind him. The trapdoor sealed itself. Jig sat on the floor, trying to catch his breath, when he noticed Smudge clinging to his leg.
Decided to forgive me after all, then?
Or maybe the spider had simply decided that coming with Jig was better than being left alone in the pit. It didn't matter. Jig felt better for Smudge's company. At least, he felt better until he spotted the hobgoblins coming down the corridor. All the hobgoblins wore armor they had cobbled together. Bits of plate mail strapped over leather and chain, and several had shields of varying designs as well. All used swords or axes. No kitchen knives here. Risland slipped his bow from his shoulder and knocked an arrow in one smooth motion. Marius and Darnak each took a step forward, leaving room for Risland to fire, while at the same time shielding him from attack. Two hobgoblins fell before they even reached the adventurers. A third stumbled over the bodies of his fellows, and Barius's sword licked out to slice deep into the side of his neck. Despite their strength and numbers, the hobgoblins didn't stand a chance. Jig wouldn't have recognized the adventurers as the same people who had, minutes before, shouted and snapped at one another like children. They were a team, working with one another, whereas the hobgoblins struggled as much among themselves as with the enemy.
That's the key. The ability to trust and work together in battle.
The hobgoblins fought so haphazardly that the adventurers hardly needed to work at all. The hobgoblins were practically killing themselves. And then it was over. The survivors retreated back up the tunnel. Bodies covered the ground in front of the three adventurers. The carrion worms would eat well tonight. Jig watched the adventurers clean their weapons and armor. One unexpected blessing was that victory had improved Barius's temper. He didn't even insist on retying Jig's bonds.
Three victories in a single night. Surely the gods smile upon my quest. We shall find the rod, for nothing beneath this mountain has the strength to stop us. Come, let us find the entrance to the lower tunnels. We will rest there before descending to give my brother time to renew his strength. Lead on, goblin.
Lead he did, guiding them away from the hobgoblins and through the slowly descending tunnel that led to the lake. He didn't even worry about what they faced there. Jig was too confused by what he had just seen and by what it meant. In their fight with the hobgoblins, the adventurers had used no magic. Their weapons, while of good quality, were no more magical than those of the foe. There had been no time for trickery or ruses, and still they had wiped out three times their number without losing a single one of their party. The air was cooler here. A thin green film of moss covered the walls and ceiling, even the edges of the floor. The air smelled like dead fish as they neared the lake.
How far to this lake? I feel as though we've passed through half the mountain. Wouldn't surprise me if we found ourselves emerging from the far side.
Jig reminded himself that they couldn't yet hear the water.
Up ahead, not far.
Excellent. Then let us rest here for the night. Assuming it is still night, that is. Who can tell this far underground?
It's nigh about an hour past midnight.
Who but a dwarf, that is. We will take turns watching for danger. I shall watch first. Each man takes a shift of 1 hour. No longer, or you will begin to lose your focus. Darnak, I will awaken you when my shift is up.
Jig knew, without being told, that he would not be asked to take a watch. Trust a goblin to protect them in their sleep? Ridiculous. He curled into a tight knot, back against the wall, and tried to pretend he was back in his lair. Slender hands shook Jig awake. His vision was always worst when he woke up, and at first he could only stare dumbly at the red-haired blur above his face. Darnak had shuttered the lantern for the night, and the cracks of light that escaped were barely enough to let him make out slender, pointed ears and a narrow nose.
You sleep hard. Don't speak. The others are asleep. If you go quietly, they won't be able to catch you.
Jig looked at the others, but saw only three mounded bedrolls, like giant cocoons.
Why?
They know I won't run off. I wouldn't make it past the hobgoblins, let alone survive long enough to see the surface. But you could escape.
You're a prisoner? But you're an elf.
So?
I thought all elves were strong and powerful.
Yeah, and I thought all goblins were selfish, backstabbing cowards.
But we are.
Never mind. Before they came here, they stopped at an inn to rest. Riesling caught me trying to pick his pocket. I thought I could earn a coin or two off those pretty pouches he carries. Instead, he dragged me to his room and offered me a choice. I could either come along and help them on their stupid quest, or he could kill me on the spot. He said he would prefer not to kill me, since the dead elf might cause diplomatic problems for his father. I didn't believe him. I think he wanted to kill me. He's as bad as his brother. Those eyes. I felt like I was staring into my own funeral fire.
Why would Riesling want to kill you?
He's a wizard. Remember that powder he used to enchant the rope? What do you think that was made from? I heard them talking earlier tonight. He got that powder by grinding up skeletons of two unhatched griffins. What sort of ingredients do you think he could get from an elf? We're magical creatures too. Not as strongly magical as griffins, but I'm sure he could find uses for an elf girl.
Are goblins magical?
Of course not.
Do all wizards use that sort of thing for their spells?
How should I know? Everyone does magic differently, I think. Even the dwarf can do a little when he prays hard enough. I saw him do it before we came here. He prayed over the two humans to make them stronger and faster. After that, they both looked larger, more dangerous. He didn't bother to give me Earthmaker's blessing, of course.
I still don't understand why they brought you along. Isn't it dangerous for them to kidnap an elf? Won't the other elves be angry?
My parents died in a border war when I was a child. A human family brought me up and set me to work as a kitchen drudge. They had a large family, aunts, uncles, grandparents, and a herd of kids. I scrubbed pots and cooked for them for 10 years before I ran away. I thought I could go back and be with my real family. Even if my parents were dead, at least I could live with other elves. But I couldn't even speak the language. They were terribly kind, of course. They fed and sheltered me, all the while treating me like I was slow in the head. I was more of a pet than anything. So I ran away from them too. They were so proud and confident and graceful. Even a crippled elf could make me feel like a clumsy fool. Their attitude didn't help matters either. He talked about me behind my back. Called me a half-breed, even though I was as elven as they were. But I wasn't. I didn't feel like an elf. I hadn't grown up with elves. The simplest rituals of daily life left me confused and angry. Soon I was stealing from the other elves. I didn't need to steal, I did it because I was so angry. I think everyone was happy when I left. Being on my own was no better though. I robbed travellers so I would have enough money to buy food. I slept in the streets. I thought about buying passage on the ship. Didn't know where I'd go, but anywhere had to be an improvement. Well, it wouldn't have been. I think that's why I never really tried. I could have stowed away, but I knew there was no place I belonged.
You don't belong here either. What did Riesling want you to do for them? Down here, I mean.
I've picked a lock or two in my time. They thought that might be useful. They wanted me to look for traps as well, but I've no more chance of spotting a trap than you would. Berius is furious that I didn't warn him about the hobgoblin's pit. They think that because I'm a thief, I'm a good hand at traps and knives and sneaking around in the darkness. Maybe some thieves do all that, but I just cut purses and break into the occasional inn room. And it's a rare merchant who plants a trap on his purse. Go. You saved my life, I owe you. And it would be good to thwart them in this one small thing.
I can't go back.
You can. They only let me stand watch because elves need less sleep than dwarves or humans, and they were exhausted from all the fighting. You won't have another chance to get away.
No.
You goblins are as stubborn as... that dwarf!
With that pronouncement, Rihanna turned her back on him and stared into the tunnel. Jig sat there, confused, and eventually decided goblins simply weren't meant to understand the minds of surface dwellers. He tried to go back to sleep.
Do you think we'll make it?
Not really.
And then Jig was asleep.
Huh? Wait, he...
When Jig next awoke, he found Darnak's face hovering over him.
Get up. You've had yourself a better night's sleep than the rest of us, and it's time we were moving.
Darnak tossed a chunk of something round and brown onto Jig's lap, followed by a few strips of dried meat.
You're lucky to be getting any meat at all. His Majesty wanted you to have nothing but bread. He said you'd be sharing Rihanna's water skin. Don't get greedy. I don't know when we'll find fresh water. An Earthmaker's a busy god who doesn't like to waste time on water purification magic.
Jig nodded. He tore the meat with his teeth, and his mouth watered instantly.
How long has it been since I last ate? Feels like weeks. Could it be only yesterday I was back in the lair, suffering through muck duty?
A few seconds later, the meat was gone, and Jig stared warily at the bread. He had heard of this crusted stuff from Golaka, but had never encountered it himself. A dark brown shell covered a lighter interior of dry foam, visible where Darnak had torn the chunk from a larger loaf. He touched it to the tip of his tongue, but the bread had no taste, like licking a rock.
Yuck.
He tried a nibble, like chewing a rock, too. But the others were eating it, and those two strips of meat weren't going to keep his stomach happy. Jig shrugged to himself and smashed the crusted side of the bread onto one of his fangs. He swiftly tore it into manageable chunks, and soon the bread joined the meat in his belly.
Bread doesn't taste like rock after all. Doesn't taste like much of anything, really.
Water?
Rihanna handed him a bloated skin, then walked away without ever meeting his eyes.
Is she angry with me for not running away last night? Or has she simply reverted to her usual cold self?
Not that it mattered. Jig was more comfortable when they treated him like a prisoner, or at best an untrustworthy guide. He wasn't used to kindness or consideration from anyone, let alone his captors. So he didn't know what to say when Rihanna returned a few minutes later and handed him a long sheathed dagger. Jig stared in disbelief.
Where did this come from?
Rihanna pointed. Down the tunnel, two hobgoblins lay facing the ceiling, one atop the other. Each had a black-fletched arrow jutting from his neck.
Oh.
Jig started to draw the knife. More of a short sword, really. The blade stretched the length of his elbow to fingertip, and it was heavy. The pommel and crossguard were simple brass, and the hilt was bare wood, but this was still the grandest weapon Jig had ever held. He shoved the blade back into its sheath, then drew it completely free.
Are you mad? Let this creature have a blade of his own, and you'll soon find that blade plunged into your back.
What if we were attacked again? Where would we be if Jig hadn't found that old sword when we were in the hobgoblin pit?
You'd trust a goblin to defend your person? I could understand if you secured a knife for your own safety, but to hand it over to this blue-skinned monster is absurd.
Rihanna spat on the floor by Barius's feet. He looked down, momentarily speechless, and when he looked back up, Rihanna had a knife in her hand.
What made you think I didn't secure one for myself?
Enough. Put them away before I crack all your skulls. Darius, let them have the pig stickers. They know well enough what will happen if they cause trouble.
Do not cross me again, elf.
As Jig tucked his new sword through his belt, he glanced at Rihanna. Whereas his sword was plain and well used, hers was trimmed in gold, and even sported a blue gem in the pommel. She grinned at him as she slid it back up her sleeve.
That blade looks as fine as Barius's sword.
It should. It's his.
Feeling bolder now that he was armed, Jig walked back to the corpses and took a large belt pouch for himself. Dumping a few corroded coins on the floor, he tied the pouch at his waist, then dropped Smudge inside.
only until my shoulders have a chance to heal.
Once everything was repacked, new oil poured into the lantern, a few last touches made to Darnak's map, and everyone had eaten enough to take the edge off their hunger, they proceeded to sit around for another hour while Risland meditated. The life of an adventurer appeared to consist of roughly 6 parts boredom to 1 part stark terror, or so it seemed to Jig.
What are we waiting for?
Silence!
He's needing to clear his mind and renew his focus. Those tattoos on his arms are a spell, one that keeps him ever open to the power he uses for magic. Far better than books or scrolls, but a permanent spell is a permanent burden, and if he doesn't stop to rest, the spell could snap, leaving him powerless when he needs it most.
What about his eyes? Is that a part of the magic?
Nah, he did that to himself a year or so back. Thought it would make him look scarier or some nonsense like that. Turns out he got the spell wrong and he hasn't figured out how to make it go away. The glow gets worse when he's pushed himself.
When Rysland's eyes shot open, they looked almost human, with only the faintest trace of red.
I'm ready.
Barius and Jig again took the lead as they neared the lake. They passed several side passageways, but Jig was out of his territory now. And when asked where the tunnels led, he could only shrug.
The lake is this way.
The tunnel widened, and then the walls peeled back completely to reveal an enormous cavern. Dark red obsidian gleamed as if polished, the water having renewed the rock's shine. The walls stretched out of sight to either side. Brianna pointed to the ceiling.
What are those?
They're just rocks.
A long time ago, malachite formations had striped the walls and ceiling near the entrance as well. But hobgoblins and goblins had taken the green needles of rock for jewelry and decoration. They still existed over the lake, beyond easy reach.
They look like green porcupines.
Jig nodded rather than admit he didn't know what a porcupine might be. The lake itself was black, with white foam cresting the waves that crashed against the shore. In the distance, toward the center of the lake, the water rushed with even greater violence. To Jig, it was no more than a blur of waves and whitecaps, but the others stared worriedly at whatever it was they saw.
That's a bloody whirlpool!
The way to the lower tunnels is through that!
Jig nodded, trying to project confidence and calm. In truth, he hadn't a clue how to get to the lower tunnels. They were the ones who had mentioned going through the lake. A sense of self-preservation kept goblins from even trying to venture into the water.
I sense power here. No natural lake could sustain a whirlpool for long. If the lake bed itself were cracked, the water would soon drain into the tunnels beneath.
Wager the way through is at the bottom of that twister.
Something slipped out of the water and began to crawl toward them. They could all die from lizardfish poison before they even made it to the lake.
Lizardfish!
Ugly things, aren't they?
Darnak drew his club and calmly waited while the lizardfish crawled closer. Jig had never seen a living lizardfish before. This one was as long as his arm, with clawed front feet and webbed rear feet that dragged behind in the sand. The round head had slits for a nose and a wide mouth filled with needle-sharp teeth that could rip flesh from the body so cleanly you wouldn't even notice. The eyes bulged like white bubbles that had been stuck to the skull as an afterthought. Most dangerous, Jig knew, was the line of 2-inch spines that started at the back of the skull and ran all the way to the tip of the lizard fish's long tail.
The spines are poison!
Darnak ignored him. The dwarf watched as the lizard fish drew nearer. When it was only a few feet away from the dwarf, it raised its head. The blue tongue flicked out and the spines lifted threateningly. Threatening or not, Darnak didn't appear to care. He calmly stomped its skull into the rock.
Stupid little beast, too.
Several more emerged from the water and crawled toward the dwarf. Barius stepped forward to join him. His sword impaled one of the creatures and flipped it back into the water. Another attacked with a sudden burst of speed, only to die beneath Darnak's heavy boot. Even as Darnak wiped lizard fish guts from his boot, however, more were racing forward to attack.
Back!
The adventurers backed up near the tunnel. Nothing followed. The lizard fish wouldn't come this far from the water, it appeared.
We could stand there until we were hip deep in the things. They'd still keep coming. Not a brain in the lot of them.
All it takes is one slip. One moment of carelessness and those spines would be the end of us.
Well, then I guess we better stay on our toes, eh, boys?
They won't turn back. They probably don't know how to retreat.
As they contemplated how to get past the lizardfish, Jig stared at the beach. The lizardfish had returned to the water, leaving the dead bodies behind to rot. Something else would no doubt come along to feast on the remains. Carrion worms, perhaps. Or maybe some other creature scavenged the lakeshore. That was how the cycle worked.
Goblin, get back here!
Risland held out 5 vials of a dark green liquid.
This is antitoxin. I had hoped to save it for emergencies, but I see no other way to survive the lizardfish.
Jig took one of the small vials and stared at it with suspicion.
What died to create these potions? And how did Risland know to bring antitoxin? Is this common practice among mages? Maybe so. If Risland is a normal mage, it's understandable why people would try to poison them.
The others drank it down, even Rihanna. If anyone had reason to doubt the mage, it was her. Jig shrugged. It couldn't be worse than bread.
We have a half hour. Maybe more for the goblin and the elf, as they're smaller. Come.
Risland strode back toward the lake. Darnak hurriedly finished drawing a small lizard fish on the map, marked it dangerous, then rolled the whole thing up and tucked it into a hard leather tube. As they walked, he used a block of sealing wax to waterproof the seams. By the time they reached the shore, Darnak's precious map was safely tucked into his pack.
Follow.
Risland walked straight toward the water, ignoring the lizard fish that scurried up the beach. Darnak and Barius killed them as they approached, but Risland appeared oblivious.
What is he planning to do? Just swim up to the whirlpool?
The wizard's hands began to move in small circles, fingers pointed toward the surface of the lake. Jig waited for a flash of lightning to kill the lizard fish, or a magical bridge to suddenly appear over the water. As he stared, a lizard fish ran up and jabbed Jig with the spines of its tail. Jig grabbed his knife and stabbed at the lizard fish, which dodged to the side and ran off. It ran straight into the path of Darnak's club.
I guess I'll find out whether or not this potion works.
Jig looked back toward Risland, and his eyes widened. Risland had begun to walk across the surface of the lake. As Jig stared, Barius followed his brother. Jig hurried after them, not wanting to be the last target for swarms of angry lizard fish. He and Rihanna reached the edge together, and only then did he see what Risland had done. A path of ice, several yards wide, led straight toward the center of the lake.
It's frozen. Incredible.
But at what cost? Where does he get all that power?
Jig shrugged. Magic was beyond him. He was more interested in knowing how he was supposed to walk along the ice path without slipping. Several of the lizardfish started to follow, but Risland's spell had an added bonus. Lizardfish didn't like ice. Some of them took a step, then backed onto the shore, shaking their claws. Others, apparently more stubborn than the rest, tried to run off to the party. Their legs danced like marionettes as they tried to minimize contact with the ice, and eventually they slipped out of control and splashed back into the water. At the whirlpool, Risland stopped.
There is something below. I sense a buildup of power beneath us, and none of the creatures have come near this place. Hold your breath. As you pass, I will cast a charm to strengthen your lungs, but you must fight the urge to breathe. Water is a powerful element, and it will throw all its power against you. If you fail, you will die.
Earthmaker, watch over me. But if you had told me what I'd have to endure to keep these two safe, I'd have told you to send a bloody merman in my place.
Darnak checked to be certain his club was lashed to his belt and tightened the straps of his pack. He leaped into the water and was dragged down into the whirlpool. Darius went next. He was followed by a reluctant Rihanna. When Jig's turn arrived, he stood there, trying to steady his nerves.
Remember to hold your breath.
Jig stared at the whirlpool. The ice actually extended a few inches past its edge, so he would fall several feet into the freezing water. All he had to do was jump. The others had done it. A look back told him he had no choice. He could see unbroken waves behind them. The bridge of ice had begun to melt. He couldn't go back. At that point, Jig's frightened thoughts were interrupted. Brisland kicked him headfirst into the wall. He barely remembered to hold his breath. Just when he was spinning so fast, he thought his stomach would explode. He flew through the air and collided with something hard. As the world flashed white, he had time to realize that Smudge was still tucked into his belt pouch. He hoped the fire spider had survived. Jig cracked his eyes and took his first look at the necromancer's territory. The whirlpool flowed through a large crack in the ceiling and into this room. The spinning cylinder of water stood like a pillar as wide as Jig's outstretched arms. The surface was smooth as glass, and only the bubbles rushing round in quick circles broke the illusion. Jig wondered how he had passed through the barrier that kept the water in place.
I fell through that, as if I didn't have enough fodder for my nightmares.
Everyone else had made it through more or less intact. Brisland was checking on the dwarf, who looked as though he was still unconscious. Brianna bled from a cut on her head, and her cheek sported an angry bruise. Barius slumped against a far wall, barely awake. Jig fumbled with the wet ties on his belt pouch. Eventually, he managed to undo the knot so that he could check on Smudge. A blast of steam caught him in the face like a miniature geyser. Smudge leaped a good foot into the air, trailing steam behind him. He turned to run away from Jig, spotted the tail of the whirlpool, and raced right back to the goblin's side. Jig searched the room for something to feed the battered fire spider. A few bugs, an old rat, anything would do. Smudge had been through a lot, and he deserved some reward. But the room was as clean as any he had seen. The walls were black marble, polished to reflect the lantern light. Someone must have relit the lamp, since Jig doubted the flame could have survived the trip. The floor was the same black marble, and up close, Jig could see that red lines ran jaggedly through the marble like tiny veins. As for the ceiling, Jig stared. This was another mosaic, the same as in the shiny room up above. The same style, but not identical. The colors were brighter. Perhaps the maker had used different types of glass, or perhaps the necromancer's minions weren't as dirty as the goblins and hobgoblins. The column of water interrupted the image. Rather, the picture had been created around the pillar. Walls of color came together around the column, where flecks of blue glass gave the impression of splashing water.
Ugh. Feels like I took a nap on Earthmaker's anvil and woke up with his hammer pounding my bones.
Darnak reached back and pulled off his pack. The dwarf sorted through his belongings, eventually pulling out a large blue wineskin. A few long swallows, and he sat down again.
Oh, much better. Nothing like dwarven ale to take the edge off a bad day. Everyone got a bit banged up, it seems.
Darnak used his club to push himself up. With a nod of thanks to Risland, who had cleaned a cut on Darnak's scalp, he hobbled over to check on Barius.
Well, I'll get him fixed up, and then we can see about paying a visit to this necromancer of yours.
Darnak?
What is it?
How are we going to find the necromancer? There are no doors. How are we supposed to get out of the room?
Damn me. Well, check around for hidden doors. I won't believe I let myself be flushed through that for nothing, as I'm not looking to go back through anytime soon. There must be another way out.
Leaving Jig to cock his head at the questionable logic, Darnak knelt next to Barius and took the prince's head in his hands. He studied Barius's eyes for several minutes before reaching inside his armor and pulling out a small silver hammer on a chain. He clasped both hands around the hammer as if to pray.
Go on, then. Get the elf to help search.
Jig pushed himself to his feet. Rihanna joined him, limping slightly. One hand pressed a large raw scrape on her elbow.
Feel like I swallowed half that lake on the way down.
Jig didn't answer. He studied the walls closely, wondering how he should go about searching for hidden doors. The marble was smooth and cold to the touch. Jig saw Rihanna wrap her knuckles against the wall.
She's listening for hollow areas. Knocking on a door will produce a different sound than knocking on a wall.
How clever of her.
Jig followed the wall in the opposite direction, tapping and running his hands over the marble as he walked. He heard nothing unusual, and his knuckles swiftly began to complain. He took out his new sword and used the pommel to tap the wall instead. Still nothing. By the time he ran into Rihanna on the opposite side of the room, Barius was up. Darnak's prayers had apparently done wonders for the prince. Jig wished he could have seen exactly how this magic healing worked, but the dwarf had already pulled out a fresh parchment to begin his new map.
Have you found nothing?
Neither Jig nor Rihanna bothered to answer.
The least he can do is help us search.
But Jig knew enough to keep that thought to himself.
The fool goblin has led us to a dead end. Brother, use your art to find a way out of this trap.
Rysland's face was as cold as the marble walls, but his eyes burned brighter than Jig had ever seen. On Jig's shoulder, Smudge grew warmer, echoing his unease.
Get in there, come on.
Jig tried to move Smudge back into the pouch, but the spider would have none of it. He wriggled free and ran back up Jig's arm. After what they had gone through, Jig couldn't really blame him. He simply didn't want to burn his other shoulder. But he couldn't pay attention to Smudge, not without taking his eyes off of Rysland. Jig knew Smudge well enough to heed his warnings, and at that moment, Smudge thought the wizard was dangerous.
Yes. Let me use my art once more, as if it were no more than a tool to be used at your convenience.
Easy, lad. Barius meant nothing by it.
No need to apologize. Indeed, without my power, we could spend the rest of our lives in this room.
Without your brother, we wouldn't have come after the rod in the first place. Without the elf, we'd have had a rough time getting through that first gate. And without me, you two would have killed one another before we ever made it to the mountain. We're all needed here, and nobody's questioning your importance.
Jig watched closely as Rysland strode to one wall and raised his head. He studied the unbroken marble and frowned, as though insulted by its presence. The green tattoos on his hands began to glow. Once, Jig thought he saw them move, like luminescent worms crawling beneath white skin. Hands still at his side, Rysland began to circle the room. Jig hurriedly got out of the way. So did the others, though Barius tried hard to make the move appear casual. A few paces past Rihanna, the wizard stopped.
Here.
He raised one hand and pointed. Green light spread out from his finger to form a rectangle on the wall. His hand closed into a fist. Nothing changed. Rysland squinted at the door. Another beam of light struck the center of the door, revealing a narrow keyhole.
This is the elf's responsibility, I believe. Will there be anything more, my brother?
The light died as Rysland walked away, but the door remained visible behind him. Jig's eyes widened, and his ears flattened against his head as he realized why he was suddenly so afraid of Rysland. Ever since they came through the whirlpool, the wizard's voice had been different. The difference was so subtle Jig hadn't noticed at first, and he doubted any of the others could hear it at all. But each time Rysland spoke, it was as though a second voice spoke the same words along with him. He stroked Smudge's head and body, trying to calm the agitated spider.
Am I imagining things? Slamming into the ground on the way out of the whirlpool could have affected my hearing. Yet if that's the case, why am I not hearing the same distortion when the others speak?
Besides, Jig wasn't the only one afraid of Rysland. Even Barius regarded his brother with wary eyes, and one hand rested on his belt, close to the hilt of his sword. Whether they heard the change or not, they knew enough to be watchful.
I will be fine. I simply overexerted myself. By the time you open the lock, I shall be myself again.
Nobody relaxed, but Barius did wave Rihanna toward the door. She rolled her eyes and pulled several thin metal tools from a pack at her belt. She grabbed the lantern in passing, leaving the rest of them in shadows. Rihanna began to work on the lock, but Jig didn't watch. He couldn't look away from Rysland's struggle, for the human was obviously at war within himself. His fists clenched into knots, and his neck had tightened to the point where the muscles formed raised lines of skin between the neck and shoulders. Barius went to watch Rihanna work on the lock, but Darnak remained close by the wizard. One hand went to the small hammer around his neck. The other reached toward Rysland. Ryslin's fist shot out, and the dwarf caught it in his free hand. Between the darkness and his own poor vision, Jig couldn't be certain, but he thought he saw the dwarf flinch.
What kind of strength does it take to do that to Darnak?
I am all right.
Almost lost it there, did you?
Ryslin didn't answer. He turned around, and his eyes narrowed when he saw Jig watching. Jig tried to swallow, but fear stuck in his throat like an oversized chunk of meat. He couldn't apologize for watching. He couldn't even break away from Ryslin's angry gaze. Ryslin looked away.
What happened?
The silly girl triggered a trap.
A trap?
Jig followed the dwarf to the door. Rihanna sat on the floor, clutching her index finger with an expression of shock. A tiny bead of blood glistened at her fingertip.
Yeah, a needle trap. Probably poisoned.
It was an accident.
Wait, what about the potions we took to protect us from the lizard fish poison? Will they be enough to protect her?
The potion was a short-acting one. I don't know if it will still be effective. Nor, without knowing what poison was used, can I be certain that even a full dose would have protected her. Were I to create such a trap, the types of poison I might choose would still kill her.
Jig stepped closer to the door. A tiny needle protruded from the lock.
Is this sort of thing common where you come from? Hidden doors, trap locks. How do you people survive from day to day?
Only a fool would put his faith in a simple lock.
Oh, Earthmaker, help us.
Rihanna's finger had begun to shrivel, and the skin turned grey as they watched. The nail yellowed and cracked at the tip. She touched the dying flesh with her other hand.
It's cold!
The necromancer's work, no doubt.
Can you heal her?
It's in the gods' hands now. Broken bones, bloody cuts, and other wounds of honest battle, those I can heal with Earthmaker's blessing.
The decay spread toward the second knuckle. Rihanna held her hand away from her, clutching the wrist with her good hand.
Poison and magic, though. Those are beyond me.
Your counsel, old teacher.
Barius drew the dwarf to the other side of the room. Jig perked his ears. No doubt their voices were too quiet for Ryslin to overhear, and Rihanna was too distraught to listen. Goblin ears were another matter. With everything he had seen in the past hour, Jig wasn't about to let anyone start plotting behind his back.
How long before the poison slays her?
It's not the slaying that worries me. You saw her finger, dead but still moving. I fear what she'll become.
If the poison takes her, she could turn upon us. That cannot be permitted.
And what would you have me do about it?
I will distract the girl, make her end quick and painless.
'Tis not in me to murder an innocent girl in cold blood, nor is it a worthy thought for a prince. I'd have expected such from the goblin, but not you.
She's no innocent. She's a thief. By law, she should have been imprisoned the moment she tried to rob us.
Imprisoned, aye, but not executed. Your father would have my head if I...
My father is not here with us. In his absence, my word is his law.
I'll not do it. I'll not kill a girl in cold blood, not even for you.
Jig nodded with satisfaction. Only an instant passed, though, before he realized what the dwarf had not said. He'd not killed Rihanna, but he wouldn't stop Barius from doing so either. Jig looked again and saw Barius walking toward Rihanna. His hands were empty, but his face was carefully expressionless. Ryslin fell into step behind his brother.
Rihanna, give me your hand.
She obeyed, too scared to argue. Jig rolled his eyes.
The other one.
Trembling, she held out her poisoned hand. The decay had taken over most of the finger, with only a thin ring of healthy skin above the knuckle. Jig studied it closely, folding her other fingers back so he could see better.
What's going to happen?
How old are you?
16.
But I thought elves lived to be hundreds of years, even thousands.
You think we're born with centuries already behind us? There'd be hell on the mother.
Rihanna, we must speak of your injury.
They're going to let me die, aren't they?
No!
Rihanna started to move toward the humans. Jig tightened his grip and pulled her off balance. With his other hand, he drew his sword and placed it at the base of her wounded finger. She looked back, eyes wide with fear and betrayal. Jig didn't have time to explain. He pulled the blade toward himself as hard as he could. His sword sliced through the finger, then continued on to slash Jig's own forearm. Rihanna stared, shocked at the blood leaking from the stump of her finger. Jig watched his own blood drip from the long cut in his arm. The sword slipped from his fingers. He looked to Rihanna, mouth open to speak, but words failed him. She punched him in the nose. Jig staggered back into the wall. He sat down and rested his head between his knees. Hot footsteps on his back brought him back to alertness.
What is Smudge running away from?
He looked up, and when his eyes focused, he found himself staring at the tip of Barius's sword.
We should have slain you from the outset, Goblin.
Me?
I turned my back but for a few brief moments, and you draw steel against your own companions.
Jig struggled to his feet.
Me? I heard you talking to Darnik. Better to cut off a finger than...
The prince punched Jig in the jaw, knocking him to the floor. He lay there, staring at the beauty of the ceiling.
I wonder if there's any reason to stand again. Not if people are gonna keep hitting me. No, I'll just stay right here. If the gods are just, Barius will at least chip his sword down the floor when he finishes me off.
Jig closed his eyes as he waited for the next blow. A strong hand grabbed his injured arm, and powerful fingers pulled him into a sitting position. He kicked out blindly.
Here now, none of that.
What?
Huh? I know what you did. True, she hates you now, and that wouldn't have helped her against normal poison, but you may have saved her life.
I did?
Not a word about it, I warn you. He's got a temper, Barius does. I persuaded him to let you keep breathing for a while yet, but you're to lose the sword, and it's back to the rope.
Rihanna?
I'll stop the bleeding. Earthmaker should kick me for not thinking of that myself. A bit of magic, and the skin healed over as smooth as an egg. She's a little put out, mind you, but she should live.
Darnak grabbed his hammer on its thong and closed his eyes.
Now, let me see what I can do about that arm.
This time, Jig watched closely as Darnak called upon his god to work his healing magic. With the hammer hidden in his thick fist, he began to hum. So intent was Jig on watching the dwarf, he didn't notice when the pain in his arm began to recede. What had been a sharp, tearing pain became a dull burn, unpleasant, but less intense. He could feel his blood pound with each beat of his heart. The heat in his arm grew.
Like a blacksmith. Each pulse is a hammer blow that forges the flesh whole again. Fitting, coming from a dwarven god.
When Darnak pulled his hand away, a dark blue scar ran the length of Jig's forearm. Blood still smeared the skin, but it was dark and crusted. He brushed his arm, marveling at the new scar. His battle scar.
Best I can do, lad. Dwarven magic doesn't work so well on goblins, it seems.
Jig ignored him. He flexed his arm, watching the way his new scar moved with the muscles beneath. He wondered if the scar would fade with time. If only he had been allowed to keep the short sword as well. But Barius had already taken the weapon and tucked it into his own belt. The exuberance of his scar faded as he realized what it had cost him.
We have still accomplished nothing. The door remains sealed both to my brother's art and the elf's tools.
Jig watched as Rihanna examined the lock. She struggled to grasp her tools with her crippled hand, a task made harder by fear. Her hands trembled as they approached the door, and she had yet to actually touch the lock. Not that Jig blamed her. If he had been in her place, the last thing he'd want to do was poke around the trap a second time. But the ache in his jaw and the rope around his wrists made it hard to feel any sympathy. Rihanna tried again to examine the lock.
I wonder if the necromancer put a second trap on the lock.
Rihanna leaped away from the door so fast that she tripped and fell. Her tools hit the floor. Jig grinned at his mischief. The enemy might be stronger and better armed, but he could still cause trouble. Barius stomped toward Jig.
Enough! You will probe the lock for further traps.
Wordlessly, Jig held up his bound wrists. Barius turned a deeper shade of red, and Jig wondered if he had pushed too far. The prince grabbed the end of Jig's rope. He untied the knot and jerked the rope away so quickly Jig lost a layer of skin. Barius tied a quick loop in the rope and tightened it about Jig's neck. Still, the freedom to use his hands was a victory, if a small one. With an impudent grin, Jig headed for the door. Darnak knelt with Rihanna to one side, trying to boost her spirits. He had given her a bit of his ale, a kind gesture which may have been a mistake. To judge from the way her head wobbled, elves didn't handle dwarven ale very well.
Don't worry about a lost finger. Many an adventurer has lost a finger, or worse, and still gone on to accomplish great things. Have you heard the poem of... well, I forget his name. The little guy with nine fingers from the Middle Continent. The one involved with that ring business a while back.
Jig hovered over them both.
I need a bit of twine.
He held his hands a foot apart to indicate how long. As he had hoped, among the endless junk the dwarf carried upon his back, Darnak managed to find a ball of twine, tangled up like an abandoned nest. He ripped a piece free and handed it to Jig. He seized his trophy and moved to the front of the door. For once, he knew exactly what to do. Better still, none of the others had thought of it. He scooped up one of Rihanna's discarded tools, a thin steel rod as long as his hand, with several diamond-shaped ridges near one end. He also grabbed her severed finger. He lashed the rod to the end of the finger. He jabbed the metal rod into the keyhole and wiggled it around. The finger itself felt strangely stiff, more like leather-wrapped wood than flesh. No trace of blood showed at the severed end, and a bit of bone protruded a half-inch past the shrunken skin, giving Jig a convenient handle. The poisoned needle jabbed the fingertip repeatedly as he worked, but nothing else happened. He tried for several more minutes, not knowing what exactly might trigger the traps. He could still feel the rod scrape the inner workings of the lock, and he poked those as well. Still nothing.
I guess there are no more traps.
Jig dropped the finger, still tied to the lockpick, and walked back to sit against the wall. If he had built this room, he definitely would have put a second trap there. Rihanna stood. Her face was stone as she walked determinedly, if a little unsteadily, to the door. Pale as she was, she didn't flinch when she picked up the finger and tucked her lockpick free. She used her knife to bend the needle aside, then began to work on the lock itself. While she worked, Jig went over to claim the discarded twine. He returned to his spot by the wall. He took his belt pouch and chewed at the leather cord, trying to remove it without damaging the pouch itself. After a few minutes, the old cord lost its fight against goblin teeth, and he slipped it free. He used the cord to tie the pouch over his right shoulder. Bringing the end of the pouch to his mouth, he used his fangs to bore two holes in the bottom. The twine secured that end to his upper arm. Smudge still refused to crawl into the pouch, and Jig couldn't blame him. But this would provide a perch where the fire spider could sit without burning Jig whenever they walked into danger. Which seemed to happen every time Jig took a breath.
Prepare yourselves! We've dallied here long enough, and the gods only know what waits behind that door.